Hello, welcome to Spotlight, creativity during the chaos of the TT.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
This evening, we look forward to the Isle of Man Symphony Orchestra Summer Concert with a special guest. Young Manx storyteller Skillen Vannen head off to the Llangollen Eisteddfod and the last stand for a classic Manx tribute act. Remember, do get in touch with any creative, artistic endeavours you might be involved in, planning, hoping to create, or would really like to put in the spotlight. Poetic, theatrical, musical, literary, ceramic, sculpture, drag, film, mime, rock music on this evening. Howard Kane with an E at manxradio.com, spotlight at manxradio.com. Love to hear from you. Let's get you on the show. There's always a few more creeping through. There's lots more out there, I know. And if you've done something before, don't forget, come back and let's do something again. Hope you're managing your TT period in whatever way suits you, whether that's out with the bikes embracing the event or hiding somewhere in the north or the south in order to avoid them. Either way, Spotlight remains an oasis of artistic calm. Part of Elgar's Enigma Variations, one of the pieces to be performed at a summer's concert by the Isle of Man Symphony Orchestra just before Timwald Day, the Timwald Weekend, at the Villa Marina. The concert features some classical favourites, something for everyone. To find out more, well, I spoke to the chair of the Isle of Man Symphony Orchestra, Andrew Cole, joint orchestra conductor Graham Kirkland, and guest conductor and keen Man City fan, or is it Man United? Well, they're both the same, really, aren't they? Stephen Threlfall.
We usually come to the villa in the autumn, end of November or beginning of December, and we're very fortunate this year because there happened to be a free slot on July the 5th, which is Tynwald weekend, Sunday evening, and we thought, well, let's use that to have a summer concert at the villa and maybe attract a different kind of audience, some of the same people, and we therefore decided to put on a very popular programme of very well-known music.
So something, we're hoping, something going to appeal to everyone here.
Yes, indeed. All ages, yes, all backgrounds, I think so. Some of the music will be known directly from people listening to it. Some of them might have heard it on things like TV adverts or in film music. People who are old enough to remember The Lone Ranger will recognise part of the William Tell overture.
Yeah, I'll be there. Two conductors, we've got the two conductors here. So, Graham, you're normally guest conductor for the Symphony Orchestra.
Or joint conductor. I share the duties with Nigel Harrison.
And how do you toss a coin to see who's doing what, or how does it work?
Well, at the moment it's working that we do alternate concerts.
Okay, yeah. And then we've got Stephen Threlfall. So you've been brought in as a guest conductor. You're not a stranger to the Isle of Man, though, Stephen?
Certainly not, no. In fact, in a way, there's a lovely tie-in to the programme because the main piece is the Enigma Variations, which Elgar wrote to my friends pictured within. And what's wonderful about music is the friendships that are created in a musician's life. I first met Graham when I came over here with the piano trio to do some concerts, King William's, Castle Rushen and workshops, and I've been a couple of times since. So the friendship with Graham is partly why I'm here, and it kind of resonates with, as I say, the Elgar Enigma Variations itself. So there's a lovely tie-in with the programme and musical friendships, which are so much a part of a musician's life. I have former students in my previous life as director of music at Cheetham School of Music. I've got former students here. One of them's the co-leader and one of them's playing the tuba.
Wow.
I didn't ask him directly to play some scales yesterday, but I could have done to see his reaction. But, you know, and also the friendship that should exist within an orchestra, and certainly was with the couple of days I spent with them, was clear to see.
Talks to the programme then, Andrew. What have we actually got coming up on the programme for this summer concert?
Well, we're going to start with Rossini's William Tell Overture. I think it was his last opera. It's the overture from that. It's very dramatic, probably the best known one. It's split into sections depicting a day in the Swiss Alps, I think. Dawn and a storm sequence, a very beautiful after the storm call to the cows song played on the cor anglais, and then the very famous William Tell bit, the Lone Ranger bit.
Yeah, that's the bit everyone knows.
Which
isn't
is
it?
The, I think it's a march of the Swiss soldiers. So we'll start with that, and then we welcome back Dominika Mack to perform Grieg's Piano Concerto for us. Everybody knows that, I'm sure. So it's so famous, although it's also infamous because Morecambe and Wise did a version of it with Andrew Previn a long time ago.
Yes, I think if you've seen that, that you can never unsee that, really, isn't it?
Well,
every time you hear that passage.
Very difficult to forget. then we'll have an interval, and after that we've got some extracts from Bizet's L'Arlésienne Suite. But as Steve has said, the main work, and very importantly, is Enigma Variations by Edward Elgar. We would like to dedicate this piece to our very good friend Barbara Brigazzi, who was a viola player in the orchestra until this spring. She played her last concert at King William's College in March, just a week or so before she died. And so we happen to know that Barbara's favourite composer was Elgar. So we're going to say a little bit about that and then play it in her memory. We'll not play an encore, we'll just finish the concert quietly and remember Barbara.
Wonderful. And this is the piece you'll be conducting, Stephen, the Elgar?
No, my other hat to wear, I suppose, is a cello player. I was a cello player at the BBC Philharmonic for a number of years before I went off into music education. Mm-hmm. So when I'm not waving a stick, which will be for the Bizet and the piano concerto, I'm playing in the orchestra, which I'm really looking forward to, working with Graham that way. So it's a great kind of tie-in, really. The sharing of musical friendships in throughout the concert.
Absolutely. And is it a piece, I'm assuming it's a piece you're more than familiar with?
I am, because as a cello player, and if people know the overture to William Tell, it's one of the biggest cello solos in the repertoire. But also Rossini scores it for five solo cellos. So there's a lovely chorus of cellos. Most exquisite thing in the world, he says, looking with an oboe player glaring at me next to me. But before, as Andrew said, the storm sequence come out. So there's that, and there's more cello solos in Enigma Variations, one in particular which is dedicated to Basil Nevinson, who was Elgar's cello playing friend. So all those hallmarks, those musical footprints are there throughout the music.
Tricky coming into an orchestra as a sort of guest to do one of the sort of the big pieces of the evening. Is that sort of tricky sometimes, coming into work with a load of musicians who will have all worked together before and you're sort of parachuted in? Difficult, or is it something that happens sort of quite organically?
It's a really good question, very good question. I could go on for hours about that, because it's such it's such a personality thing. Having played in professional orchestra and seen many people in front of us, personalities and attitudes and approaches really, really come into it. Yeah, with an orchestra that's that knows each other well, and then some stranger walks into town, not a Lone Ranger, stranger, walks into town. But it's the kind of will it, won't it happens very, very quickly. And I saw this myself, particularly in professional orchestras, where the conductor's reading the orchestra personalities and qualities and vice versa. But I have to say, what a friendly, wonderfully friendly group of people. And it turns out I know one or two or know of people in there by sheer fluke. But that helps if you can start the rehearsal and you say, well, you know, I'm here to try and help and help us build towards the concert, and we'll work hard and we'll work fast, and that's what we did. But the smiles were still there on Sunday when I went back, and I think we've had two very profitable days, which I've thoroughly enjoyed. So if any members of the orchestra are listening to this, I did really enjoy it. But it's not always the case. It can be, there can be an attitude that pre-exists in an orchestra that is very hard to cut through, and sometimes that just takes time. Or maybe a concert can be where I say, I see how this works now. But it's dealing with human beings and fellow musicians, and that's the respect. If you share with them, as you should do, I believe, then, you know, just be honest to the art form that you love.
And does it make a big difference on who's conducting it, who's actually in charge of the evening?
Well, to take us both out of that question, in a sense, yes, it does. I can remember playing for a lovely, lovely man from East Germany years ago whose actual directions to the orchestra were not clear. But what he said and what he conveyed made the orchestra pull together. Really made it pull together, because, you know, musicians, especially musicians of really good experience, can eyeball each other and say, let's go, let's not go. And I've seen the converse, where somebody comes in and it's really dictatorial, and you can almost feel the kind of tightness, you know, clenching of you-know-whats, etc., to say, okay, when do you go back home, you know? And lots of things in between. But basically, if you give an orchestra a clear indication of how fast you want to go, or what sort of, you know, if you slam a beat down with a fast hand, you should get a fast reaction. And if that's supposed to be pianissimo and soft, then you've given them the wrong indication.
It's sure to be a wonderful evening of music. Why not get yourselves down there? Bank holiday on the Monday, so you can make an evening of it. Tickets available now. They are excellent value.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
Just as Stephen has come over to the Isle of Man to work with local musicians, pretty much the same time, a group of young Manx storytellers are heading to Wales to represent the Isle of Man at the iconic Llancyfflyn Eisteddfod. Leandra Lawler and daughter Robin came into the Spotlight studio to tell me more, and Leandra began by telling me more about the group itself, Skill and Vannon.
Basically a young youth vocal ensemble. We don't just sing, we do song, drama, dance and puppetry about the stories of man. Skill and Vannon, stories of man. We call ourselves the storytellers of man. We combine our voices, we tell stories, we tell folk stories, we do contemporary dance. We basically create an immersive experience for the audiences of all ages.
Brilliant. And then is this now going off Ireland?
So yeah, so we did actually go off Ireland last year. We were invited to, well, we created the group really to go to put ourselves forward for Lorient.
Mm-hmm.
Was
that the original reason for its formation?
Yeah, so there? I mean, I've always wanted to go to Lorient. I've always wanted to go to the Inter-Celtic Festival.
Which is massive.
Which is huge. I didn't realise quite how big it was. And so when Robin was performing when she was younger, and I've known Gráinne and David for many, like, decades, and I used to try to push Robin and Kennedy, my eldest daughter, to go do the dancing. I want to go to Lorient. and we were lucky enough to perform in Winterfest. I've got a theatre school called the Platform Theatre School, and we have this amazing vocal ensemble, and David Kilgallen invited us to sing. And backstage afterwards, I was like, oh my gosh, do you know what? We could do this in Lorient. And so you had the traditional guys there going, maybe not. I don't think this medley thing would go down there. And then we had the sort of people who are a bit more contemporary were like, yeah, I think they'd love it there. So my little brain started working and I was thinking, right, okay. And at the time, Chrissy Wilson was my musical director for Platform. So I said, are you in on this, Chrissy? She went, yeah, I'll come, I'll do it. And then I just sort of like started putting everything together, and then it just grew bigger from being a choir to oh, let's do prose, let's do pop, let's make a 10-foot Mananin puppet. So yeah, then I went to speak to Gráinne and Ailie Sheard about putting this forward. In the meantime, I was also put an application in to go to Llangollen, smaller scale, thinking, well, we may get that, and didn't really have hopes of getting Lorient. Went to speak to Ailie and Gráinne, and they were like, oh, this is a great idea. And then we got it. We got Lorient. I went, oh no, I now have to do everything that I've said. So yeah, so we did. But then I think I started putting all the plans together in the December. We had everything up and running by the May. So it was literally created that quickly. So I had Jemima Thomas made all our puppets, made lots of sponsors. David Kilgallen, I commissioned him to do a medley for us, Culture Fanon. Funded that medley for us. We took it and we performed in front of 9,000 people 5 times a week. Yeah.
Wow.
So that was the birth of Scale and Venom.
Yeah.
Came home. Very lucky to have been invited to do lots of different things since we came home. We launched the Manx language, the Year of the Manx Language. We were asked to come along to do that. And at the same time, we were awarded the Londair Award 2025 last year for the Lantern Award, mm-hmm. which I was very humbled because it's just what an award to be recognised by the Manx community as well in such a way. It was so beautiful. Then we were in the top four for the Awards of Excellence, mm-hmm. so got to perform and open the Awards of Excellence, and then we performed alongside the amazing Scran.
Yeah, yeah.
And Scran and Friends. So yeah, so and then in December this year we applied again, put an application in for Llangollen, and they were yes please, and we got through the audition phase and we're off there in July.
Terrific.
So yeah.
So where do you come from then, Ron? What have you been in since the beginning, or?
Yeah, so I'm currently in the middle of doing a master's degree off island. So because Leandra is my mum, she came to me and she was like, I really want to go to Lorient. I really want to go. And I was like, let's do it then. And so I've been involved with just helping. Well, when you've been, right, I think I want to do this. And I'm like, yeah, let's do that. And then I've been involved with the choir and doing the prose and everything just as a performer. But this year I'm getting the opportunity to conduct the choir at Llangollen.
Wow.
Which is really exciting. I've done a bit of conducting in the past, but this is going to be a big one. So I'm really excited about that.
Wow. And your master's, is that in a similar area?
No, my master's in international human rights law. Okay. So I went away and did my law degree and now I'm doing that. Is my master's, but I do have a diploma in musical theatre teaching, so that's great.
Yeah, Robin decided in her year off, while she was deciding, because she was geared to do performance.
I was.
And then she said in her year off, she went, I don't think I want to do performance, but I'm going to go and do a diploma in musical theatre teaching, just in case.
Yeah.
So she did in that year.
In my year off, and then, no, I'm definitely down the law path now, but this is fun.
So this is still in the background. And yeah. Have you always been a performer or a singer or a dancer or involved in that side of things?
Yes. I think I started doing the musical theatre things when I was about 9, and then lots of Gaiety shows followed after that. And then I was Young Singer of Man and Young Actor of Man. And then various other things.
Wow.
Alan Pickard Award.
Yeah.
Exactly. But you're keeping that now, as you say, that's going to be a sort of a second string to your bow, as it were.
I think so, yeah. Just a little fun things to do. And this has been a great project, which I've really enjoyed. So.
Yeah. And we were saying before, I think if you go to Lorient or some of these festivals, it's incredible how popular they are and how many people are there.
So many people. I mean, I didn't expect. I mean, I was told it was big, but then when you were there, it was, oh my gosh, it was amazing. The amount of different people and different cultures and different life experience of people we got to meet was very interesting. It was really great.
What do people make of the Isle of Man, do you think, when you go off? Because it is, you know, we're used to it in Manx, the Manx language, Manx dancing, Manx music. You take it elsewhere, and there are often links with other Celtic countries, but to sort of, how do people react to it?
I mean, so when we were in Lorient, obviously because the Isle of Man was so, like the Manx culture was so established in that festival, we were very warmly welcomed, so that was all fine. But though, I think people were just very interested in what we did and wanted to ask so many questions. And was like, oh, so it's where is it again? Oh, wow, that's interesting.
Sounds like it will be quite an experience. And Leandra, another of those people who always seems to have some sort of artistic project on the go. We'll hear more from both next week. Finally this evening, it's the final stand for surely one of the best known, most loved and longest lasting rock tribute bands on the island, with something of an international reputation, let alone legions of local fans. After 20 plus years and 15 consecutive TT weeks of raising the roof at the Villa Marina, DCAC are hanging up the school uniform and satchel for the very last time for what's being billed as the final stand of DCAC. They do, of course, reproduce some of the greatest rock anthems ever recorded from the original... Well, yeah, I dare say you can guess the original band. The boys, well, old boys perhaps, invaded Christy De Haven's live lounge to tell her about how they hope to go out with a bang. Quite literally, I think.
We all want this one to be the best show we ever put on, the one that sort of highlights everything for us. It is going to be emotional. I can see that happening straight away. But we're just going to go out. We've been rehearsing. We're going to go out and we're just going to give it Dixie. And we're just going to make sure that, you know, everyone that comes gets a great night and they won't forget it. I can guarantee you that.
I bet they won't. Adrian Bruce, can you actually tell us anything about what's going to be happening? Any little teasers?
There's a lot of songs. It's the largest set than we've ever done. We've got more pyro, more explosions than there's ever been before. All imported. So, I mean, we have got a lot of stuff going off. That'll be good. And yeah, the last one. It's an odd feeling. Like, I'm quite excited about it. I'm also quite nervous, but it's just... I just want to get... It's like a thank you. It's a big thank you to everybody. You know what I mean? We're just going to have the best time, I think. I think it'll be friends and family there. And yeah. I'm just really looking forward to it, actually.
Well, if you needed any proof about how well-loved you are, it was the day you released tickets. Paul, just tell me what it was like.
There was just a strange sort of... I just never expected that to happen. You know, we got down to the sea terminal to set up... I was there for probably 8 o'clock or just after that, and there was people queuing before that for tickets, and it's like, what? that kind of sort of blew me away a bit. But as we got set up and the rest of the boys came down, and the queue was going out the door, and it's like, good grief, you know, that is we don't see that side of it at all. So that was really, really sort of special for all of us. And it was just great because people can get photographs and we give some merch away. And it was just a nice atmosphere and it just worked so well.
I was more nervous about doing that than playing a gig because, you know, you put that thing on expecting people to come and, you know, we could have been there on our own.
Twiddling our thumbs at half 10 in the morning.
So I brought the Uno with us, the pack of Uno, just in case.
What would be even worse?
But we didn't need it.
Even worse would be I'd be stood in my shorts.
It's just people looking at you like,
no one there. Like, yeah. But it didn't turn out that way at all. It turned out fantastic.
No. Do you know how many you sold on that first morning?
I think it was about
400. 400
and
something?
It was about 450, 500 on the day. And over the weekend, we sold nearly 700 up to the Monday.
It's mad. And the Welcome Centre worked their butts off for the weekend. They were so good. And Orling from Cost as well, because we took over the whole space.
Yeah.
And honestly, the Welcome Centre were being brilliant. I just wanted to say that because they were so good.
Yeah. And the brilliant thing about it as well is that it happening in TT means that you get a lot of visitors, don't you, JJ? Johnny Peacock, come forward. You get a lot of visitors coming to your gigs as well. And so there were people who've been coming probably year on year during TT to see you, and they'll all get to see you again.
Well, you say your gigs, it's my first one.
Oh, of course. Oh my goodness.
No pressure, Johnny.
No pressure, no.
Final
Thanks, Paul.
Gig and you're on drums.
That's a shock.
Yeah.
Well, I say it'd be an experience for me because I've never been that side with these boys. I saw it, I've seen it a couple of times. So I know what to expect as an audience member, but as playing on the stage, it's going to be a different atmosphere completely. And we did a gig in Quids a few weeks back, and if it was anything like that atmosphere, it's going to be amazing.
So, yeah. And have they got some of your favourite songs in there on the set list?
I suggested a few, but they never made the list.
Oh, no.
But no.
But no.
But they're all great songs that we're doing. So yeah. I mean, and if anyone turns around to me and says, oh, AC/DC is easy to play, can they please go and hide in a cupboard for the rest of their lives, because it's not.
It's June the 2nd, isn't it? Let's make sure I've got that right.
Yeah, Tuesday, June the 2nd.
I did think it was sold out, but there's a few tickets left. A few tickets left.
Yeah.
So if you're very, very lucky, get there quickly. Yeah. Get your tickets as quickly as you can, because honestly, this is going to go now that the visitors are all coming over.
A lot of people walk in. We find a lot of the sales, a lot of people walk in who visitors have come over, and they walk into the villa during the week, during TT week or practice week. And a lot of the tickets just go then.
Yeah.
So there's not many left. So they're going to go.
Get on it. Yeah. What are you going to play for us, Aid?
So we're going to play traditionally the first track of an AC/DC concert. Well, it used to be anyway. It's Livewire, the High Voltage album.
Amazing. Okay, right. I'm going to lift all the microphones here and it'll be absolutely fine. Go for it, guys. Take it away.
Like it would be quite a night. Bring your earplugs, only for the pyrotechnics, of course. TT might never be the same again, and I don't think Dumpy's rusty nuts will be coming back either. That's about it for now. See you next week. In the meantime, be good, whatever you're doing. Be creative about it. Hey, Moo.